Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Dave Ninemitz.
It's Daner.
Dave Ninemitz.
All right, welcome into the latest edition of Hear That Podcast. Growlin' Paulie Jr., Dave Ninemitz of The Athletic, with you on a chilly Tuesday. There's no way around it. It's just ridiculously cold. Like, I don't want to try to come up with a good adjective for it. Like, it's just, look outside. Okay, go outside. We shouldn't even be talking about it. That's how cold it is.
At least it's not super windy right now. Although I get angry about wind chill factor. You can't just make up a new temperature that it feels like. And where did the heat index go at this time of year? Doesn't that bring it back up at all? I don't like all that.
You don't just random making it up as if we're not already kind of making it up when we're projecting. But yeah, I get it. Right. I get. Don't tell me how I feel. Okay. Right. Yeah, I hear you. Or you could have been watching, or the Bills Steelers game and just laying on a bank of snow with a Coors Light. Those dudes. Let's go. All right. Let's have a day. Man.
That's dedication.
Yeah, when you had the fans who were just having to push their way to their seats through, how did they not have a Buffalo Bills mini snow shovel giveaway that day where every fan just gets a little shovel to shovel their way through?
Yeah, it looked like it was like the whole effort to get the community to come shovel it. It was so late in the game. It was like 30% done. Just like, big,
yeah, we're just not going to do it.
Snow.
Yeah. So all that's going on, of course, the Bengals did not participate in it. But Dave, we will have some Bengals thoughts from this week. And I think there's a lot of Bengals lens takeaways from this weekend. And so we're going to kind of dive into a few of those. We'll do so with Mo Egger here in a little bit. Dane Brugler has mock draft. Two rounds. We're already into two-round mock draft season. And so I'm going to touch a little bit on Dane's pick, just kind of a brief lay of the land on some of what he's projecting, put out there, that some themes that I think are interesting to touch on. So we'll get into some of that stuff. We'll have some RBs and talk a little bit more about next round of the playoffs. But let's kind of dive in here with news. Really, the news right now is, you know, players picking their location. Cancun, Bora Bora, Bali, Miami, where are you going to go? Right? That's the player news. It's coaching news right now. And for the Bengals, that's Brian Callahan, who is a hot commodity right now as far as getting interviews. He has four, couple done already: Atlanta, Carolina, LA Chargers, Tennessee. He's in the mix there. Now, a lot of people are in the mix. I mean, that's the thing with these rounds of interviews. I mean, when they just do Zoom, I mean, they can just paint a big broad brush across any candidate. Were you an offensive coordinator on a team that's had success in the last 2 to 3 years? We'd love to talk to you. So there is a lot of that. It'll be more real once they whittle it down a little bit here. But there's a lot of jobs open. There might be more with the weekend for the Eagles and the Cowboys in particular, putting Nick Sirianni and Mike McCarthy onto some hot little seats there. And I so we'll see. I mean, this could be a lot of jobs open.
Yeah. By the way, are there any more awkward situations than when you're like Dan Quinn or Brian Johnson? Or wait, is Brian Johnson the Eagles OC? I'm confusing with Ben
Yeah.
Johnson, who's the Detroit OC.
No, well, yeah,
Like,
he's feeling all right.
yeah, I think he's going to be way up there at the top of the pyramid. You go and get the doors blown off if you're Dan Quinn, and then you got to turn around and do an interview
But
after that.
hey,
That's
look at
brutal.
Jonathan Gannon in the Super Bowl last year
True.
for the Eagles, ends up still
True.
getting that Arizona job despite, what happens there. So I don't think it crushes you. I mean, Dan Quinn goes so far back with Seattle, and I don't, we'll see how that all shakes out. I don't want to dive too much into those. They're early stages there, but yeah, you're right. I mean, you'd like to leave a better feeling as the last impression, but
Yeah.
so I don't know. Bill Belichick has interviewed in Atlanta now. I you got to think if Jer decides that he's going to move on from McCarthy, you have to feel like he would have his eyes. He'd be flirting a little bit with Bill Belichick to pull a Parcells, bringing the hoodie there to, I mean, it only makes sense. A team that just can't seem to win a playoff game, give Bill Belichick a quarterback and watch him do what he can do, like go win me some playoff games.
Yeah, I mean that's perfect drama right there to put those two. I mean, it's like an HBO drama or something would have that written into the script. Is Belichick to go join up with Jerry Jones? That'd be amazing.
That's Max, beyond Max.
That's right. You're right. You're right. I apologize. Got to get my apps right.
So we'll go. So there's a lot out there, my point. Washington hired Adam Peters as their general manager. Again, this is a one to watch with Brian Callahan. Has connections there. They go back. I mean, they go all the way back to UCLA. They were both at Denver at the same time. So keep an eye on Brian Callahan as the Washington job starts to circulate now with their GM in place and a desirable job with Dan Snyder booted. So again, we'll kind of keep an eye on that. But this for whether or not people, a lot of people, well, you think Brian's gonna get a head coaching job? Well, he's certainly gonna interview well because if you've heard him, that's the case. But there's just a lot of people out there, and until we get through to that wave of who's going in for in-person interviews, I think it's really hard to even get a gauge of how serious he could be as a candidate for some of these places. So we'll kind of wait. We're still got some time until that happens.
The fact that his name's been out there that much, though, would indicate to me that, he's getting serious consideration. Are you surprised in this offseason that he's getting this much attention? I know last year it was a lot of Lou Anarumo. Brian Callen got some look last year, but it seems like he's a little more at the forefront. Do you think, is that surprising to you? And do you think how much of that has to do with making things work once Jake Browning was the quarterback?
Well, I think that's part of it. But I just think he fits what people want.
Yeah.
He's been part of this for a while now. You've seen runs of success that have featured, the keywords of culture and evolution and playoff success. And I think he has proven it's been about more than Joe Burrow. And I just think people now are much more aware of what his role has been here as
Yeah.
far as being a real, 1-2 punch with Zach Taylor this entire time, his history with quarterbacks, and in building things around them. And who knows, if he would be bringing his dad with him as an offensive line coach, you have a
Yeah.
hell of a 1-2 combo if you could pull that off, to have a quarterback guy and an offensive line guy, and then go draft a quarterback and let them take the reins from there. So I just think people realize what his role is and what he can be and how he can fit a little bit more than maybe they did before. Maybe there was some more skepticism, or they cared too much about the play calling stuff and
Yeah.
things like that. Or word gets out that you interview well and people want to talk to you and hear what the buzz is about with that too. I
Yeah.
think that's been part of the last couple of years with him. So We'll see how it goes. Willie Anderson Hall vote coming soon. So we'll see how far he goes, but that's going to be, of course, they always end up announcing that at the Super Bowl, but that vote is upcoming. They'll be meeting and talking about that, and we'll see where that lands. But Willie has a you know, as good a chance as he could, because this is not the strongest of Hall classes, and he's been around a couple of years now. So maybe he gets in, maybe he just makes it to the top 10 for the first time in that final cut. But this could be the year for Willie, and we'll see if he gets in, and just keep an eye out for that as they get closer on that one with news. I mentioned Dane Brugler has a mock draft out for the Bengals, picking at 18. He has them taking massive raw tackle Amarius Mims of Georgia, 6'7", 330. That's Dane Brugler knowing what he's talking about. That's the type of dude they want.
Yeah.
Big, strong, anchored dude. Like, that's they don't want the fast, quick side. They want, are you huge? then the Bengals have interest. In round two, has them double dipping into Georgia, which they've had some success down there before. Maybe they would do that again.
Sure.
And taking wide receiver Ladd McConkey. So we've got, you know, we have a bunch of football families on the Bengals coaching staff. Maybe they go in with another football family with Ladd McConkey. And he would make a lot of sense. Inside outside guy, could potentially be your next Tyler Boyd, depending on how they wanted to deploy or view him. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, that type of a pick makes a ton of sense. But the one observation for me, Dave, on Dane's mock draft here, between picks 7 and 27, he has 8 offensive tackles.
Wow.
Now, we've heard this. This is a great year. They need one. There's a bunch of different types. There's not, you know, clear top 1, 2, 3, whatever. There's going to be a lot of pick your pony. And the Bengals, I think, are picking a pony that's different than a lot of other teams are picking. And I know you're listening to this and you're saying, maybe they should start picking the other team's ponies, because their ponies don't seem to be doing so well when they draft. They're bad ponies. But I think if they know what they're looking for specifically, and that giant, powerful, potentially right tackle. I mean, there's options that could be there. You know, Mims is the name that they have here, but there's others. The point is, with there being that many, and them maybe having a type that's in the minority compared to what a lot of other teams may be valuing, could play into their hands if that's the direction that they did want to go. At 18, of feeling that they really got somebody who was much, you know, very high on their board, but that certainly with a actual round one grade and potentially a top 10 on their board type of guy at 18.
Yeah. I've always just been of the thought, you can't go wrong beefing up your offensive line. Now, granted, you get misses just like you do at any other position. But if you're telling me a mauler from Georgia, and this team's, you know, won 2 national championships and could have come close to another if they had just beaten Alabama, I feel like that's one of those that feels kind of can't miss to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you've seen it before where guys go high that you think are can't miss, because I kind of feel like a lot of these offensive linemen are kind of can't, like Joe Alt from Notre Dame feels like he's can't miss to me. But do you get Quentin Nelson or do you get Mike McGlinchey when you take him? You know, it's hard, but it just seems like if Mims fits that profile of what the Bengals like, you would like to think they can make it work with him. But, you know, I think your question is, can you go another route there, find another way to plug that spot in and then get something different out of that spot?
And again, I mean, there's a bunch of other guys. I mean, you can look at someone like J.C. Latham from Alabama, who, again, just these massive dudes that played at SEC programs and got in there, mix it up. I mean,
probably eat glass. Probably eat
you
got
to feel like he's had some glass. I mean, is it 6'6", 360? What are we doing? What are these? Where are they growing these people? Oh, gosh. Just makes me get in there. I mean, it's so anyway, and you don't know. Maybe he's a guy that is sitting there at 18. We see this every year. And I went back and looked at Dane from last year, this 2.0, this one. And there's a lot of, I mean, he's obviously in the ballpark on so many of these picks and where they land. But I mean, you know, there's a bunch of guys from last year who were, he had at this point mocked in the 7 to 12 range, who went in the 20s or vice versa. Like, there's a long way to go here. So, you know, there's no name. If there's somebody you like, you've been studying, you've been grinding the tape, and really feel like you know what you want, then you know, just because Dane has them going to the top 10 doesn't mean they wouldn't be there at 18. We see 18's an interesting spot.
Yeah.
I do feel like it's right there where you get some of these, where everybody says, why is that guy falling?
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you feel like you really fell into something good. And so potentially that could be it. And maybe it's Amarius Mims. Maybe that's who it is.
It's also a scary spot too, because then you start looking at those dudes with second round grades, mm-hmm. but you really like them. So you're kind of tempted. You look at, I think of the Patriots, which they made a lot of stupid picks over last year, but when they took Cole Strange, when they did, like, they really wanted him. So it was a stretch to take Cole Strange when they did. So I think it gets a little tricky because you start peeking into that second round and there's dudes that you're like, if we don't take them now, we're not going to get them. So are we going to stretch right here? That's why I think you go for the surest thing you can get there. But we know the Bengals aren't likely to wheel and deal and move up or down. So
not in round one as much. Certainly not. Maybe back.
Yeah.
You could see happening, but I doubt it. Again, now, strategically, and something that we kind of touched on a little bit last week, we touched on a lot, so excuse me if I'm repeating myself. It was a long episode. Apologize. Thanks to those of you that like really grinded it through the whole hour and 40 minutes. But I just, their track record, I like that they have recently kind of known who they are. We don't draft these guys well. So pay guys that are a little more proven. There's just so much history of them not having any pick outside of really maybe Cordell Volson now, as he starts to come around a little bit. But even he, it's been a rocky path.
Yeah.
Just no real true success stories at offensive line for a decade. And it's just over and over and over again. And so what? Pay Orlando Brown, pay Tay Karras, pay Alex Kappa, like go pay. So maybe that should continue to be their strategy. For me, I look at a guy and say, you know what? Tyron Smith for a year. I know he's older. I know he's got injury history. Want to try to win a chip, as the kids say. Do they even say that anymore? I hope not. You want to chase a ring? You want to come play right tackle? Frank Pollock knows you. You know what you're getting into with Frank Pollock from those days. Really, like, the better of the Lel Collins conversation. You know what I mean? Yeah. You want to come do something like that, right? Play right side, whatever. Like, come on. Do something like that. Or sign somebody to play right tackle, even if it's a temporary fix and you're drafting for the future, that's fine. I prefer that to trying to plug in a rookie, even if it's the 18th overall pick in a deep offensive tackle draft and you really like him, especially if you're talking about a guy like Mims, who only has 8 starts and is a developmental guy. I would prefer them to go that way and then draft one of the, you know, that's a very small class of top defensive tackles. We know we've talked about that. Byron Murphy,
Juan
Newton. I mean, these guys that are there in that range stand out more to me than the idea of, you're going to draft another rookie tackle. You're going to put him in there in a season that you feel like you can go win it all. You're going to have some rookie right tackle and live with that. I don't like that as much
Well, and Murphy is a great example of, you know, Mo talked last week about he'd like to see difference makers on defense.
There you go.
Having watched some Texas this year, Byron Murphy screams kind of that Christian Wilkins, Quinnen Williams type defensive tackle that is just wrecking games for other teams. They were even using him at fullback. He was scoring William Perry like touchdowns this year. I can definitely see that guy as a difference maker right out of the package, as opposed to, like you say, a raw offensive lineman that you're going to have to work with. And can they afford this year to have another Miles Murphy situation where it's kind of a ease a guy along? It feels like they could really use somebody that you can plug and play. And it seems like a guy like Murphy would be more of a guy you can plug right in there, and he's going to make a difference.
Yeah, and again, I mean, you're talking about, you still have BJ Hill, so you're in a rotation. You're giving him a chance to come. He's not asked to come in and be, you know, 75% of the snaps right away. But you, by the time you get to this time of year, you think that you've got something that could be dominant and could certainly be your future, and maybe have your game wrecking tackle. I love, if I'm, you know, again, the coaches tell us this all the time, is that these boards that you see this time of year, you just can't really take them because the coaches aren't even involved yet.
Yeah.
And so once the coaches get involved, a lot of the opinions, when you merge the personnel staff and the coaching staff and get everybody in the interviews, it spits out something different. Okay. And so they're just kind of getting the lay of the land. I feel a little bit like that as well. I'm not in the draft thing all year long, like some of you guys are, or like Dane is, and these people that are familiar with it. I'm just diving into it now. But on its face, knowing a little bit of what I know, and just whether it's talking to personnel people or just from this, he's the dream for me.
Yeah.
Like the most game wrecking three tech in this draft that has, you know, the win percentage that is far beyond anybody else, and has played real dudes and has proven it on teams that have won. He's done all that stuff. And I don't know the details of the rest. Okay.
Yeah.
But to me, that's kind of like the best case scenario for the Bengals, and is to address right tackle and free agency and have somebody like, specifically like Murphy, sitting there at 18, and then you're like, check really big in those spots where you're really needing to focus. On that note, I want to start. We want to do weekend takeaways from the playoffs this weekend. This is kind of a connection between the two, and that is, I don't know what you thought, but I can't help watching these games and just say, look at all these rookie wide receivers and tight ends making huge plays.
Yeah.
I mean, continue to invest that way. Continue to cycle through. Don't be afraid to count on a large role for rookie tight ends or receivers, or in the very least, leaving that path open. Because you talk about Laporta, Kincaid, Kraft, Musgrave, all of them out there making plays. Puka Nacua, Rashee Rice, Wicks from Green Bay, rookie, all of them out here making plays this weekend. And you know that it's just that, I mean, I hate to say it's just that easy, but you don't have to use high draft capital. 13 rookies this year had at least 500 receiving yards, Dave.
Yeah.
In that group, how many were first rounders, do you think, of the 13?
Three.
Four.
Oh.
Three in round two, three on in round three, and three on day three.
Wow.
We've sort of documented this, you know, when we do positional previews for the draft over and over. This is just a consistent thing. They come from everywhere. They come from anywhere.
Green Bay being
the perfect example.
Green Bay is six receivers that are all first or second round right now, and they're all contributing. You know, Dontavian Wicks contributed. Romeo Dobbs is only second year, and he feels like he's the elder statesman of that crew. He had a monster game. Jaden Reed's been great all year. And they have no divas right now because nobody's a five-year veteran who's made a couple Pro Bowls. Yeah, they're out there. And Puka, that he's kind of a revelation, but good God.
Yeah, you can't. You're not going to expect to get Puka Nacua in round five, although some would argue the Bengals may have it in Andre Yoshivash.
Well, Kansas City, conversely, if we're telling the cautionary tale, while Rashee Rice has been good, they've had a lot of duds too. So there's Sky Moore's out there as well. You got to be careful with it, but there's definitely talent. And I think Yoshivas, that's a guy you got to keep developing. I know we kind of joked before the season that, you know, you kind of crown those guys because everybody likes them, but he showed a lot this year that he can be.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree. I think he could be in a major role next year. I mean, there's no question about that. But the point is, on so many of these guys, one thing I want to say here is they weren't asked. You know, Rashee Rice is like an example, a cautionary tale. Well, most of these guys were not asked to come in and be the man.
Very true.
They're on teams that had dudes. Now, LA might be the one example just because Cooper Kupp got hurt.
Yeah.
But I mean, they still had Cooper Kupp. You know what I mean? Yeah. There was still plenty of other pieces there. You know, Detroit had dudes. Buffalo, you know, had Stephon Diggs and had dudes. And they've got Kincaid in there now. Wicks, they had all those other guys you mentioned. I mean, so many of these teams, they don't have to come in and immediately be the guy, but they can quickly develop into that and supplant others or grow their role. And the Bengals have that. Like, I mean, they might have that more than any other team that would be drafting someone in the first three rounds of asking someone to come in and be in the Tyler Boyd role. I mean, plug drop this year's Jaden Reed when the Bengals pick at 49 into that offense. Drop this year's Tank Dell when the Bengals pick in the third round into that offense. And they don't have to be something great immediately. They can just be an addition. And that stood out to me this weekend when you kind of look at how some of these teams are winning, how some of these offenses are really going, not being afraid to have a rookie receiver or tight end be a large part of what you've become is huge. And it didn't always start that way with all these guys, but they were allowed to grow into those roles.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Mo loves talking about rookie receivers. It's one of his favorite things to do, and it could really light up training camp this year with the calls that we would get. I know you really would prefer, Mo, that they wait until round five or six, though, to draft some, like maybe three receivers in rounds five and six, so that we can all debate which one would be this year's Auden Tate, Andre Yoshivash caller to ESPN 1530 award.
Well, even better is the undrafted free agent. I mean, that's in an ideal world, and the guy comes from like Lemoyne or some school that like nobody can point to on a map, right? Like that's and Andre Yoshivash certainly was drafted this year, and by the way, looks like a legitimate NFL player, but came from Princeton, so that was perfect, right?
Yes.
Had he come from I don't know Washington State or Stanford or something, like it's one thing. I need a guy obscure school. Undrafted, not much of a pedigree, almost like you get that Dame Brugler beast. He's not even listed. That's what I'm looking for.
There will be that guy. What is Kendrick Pryor up to? Where's he at?
Be listening to this podcast.
Could be. No he idea. Might he might be a co-host soon.
It could be.
So there's but there, I look forward to that, and I think we'll have plenty of young receivers to talk about as we get into that. So we started this conversation as you jump in here, Mo, talking about takeaways through a Bengals lens this weekend. When you're watching these games, you're seeing a lot. I felt like there was a lot of things where I was having Bengals thoughts. I have many of them listed on this rundown here in front of me. When you watch how teams are winning, the mm-hmm. the way things are unfolding, the AFC North performance, there's a lot there. What for you, through a Bengals lens, stood out the most as you watched games this weekend?
I'm happier as a Bengals fan today than I would be if I was a Browns fan or a Steelers fan. You know, I said on Monday, you know, being a Browns fan the last month and a half has sort of been like being on vacation, where, you know, you go for like 2 weeks and it's like a real vacation. You're off the grid and you don't check your email. You're not looking at your phone. You're not even posting on social. Like, you are off the grid. You are enjoying this like fantasy land. But, you know, when it's over and you come back, and now, especially if you're going on vacation, this time it's 8 degrees out and the emails have piled up and your boss has like 3 projects for you. Maybe it's not the best analogy, but if you're a Browns fan, you could bathe yourself in this Joe Flacco story, understanding it had an expiration that was likely going to look like it did on Saturday, where he turns it over a bunch of times. And now, boy, you're back to trying to figure out, can we win with Deshaun Watson? And so far the answer has been, well, not because of Deshaun Watson. Now, they won games with him early in the season. And also, why is that defense so pedestrian on the road? Like, for the last 5 or 6 weeks, I think if you're a Browns fan, you could sort of enjoy yourself in fantasy land here, the Flacco thing. And boy, the defense is great as long as we're at home. But now the vacation's over and you have to confront the fact that you've got an expensive quarterback that we all still wonder if you can win with, who is another year removed from his best year in 2020. And then from a Pittsburgh perspective, okay, yep, Tomlin got his winning season and you were back in the playoffs and the Mason Rudolph thing was fun. You're still in quarterback purgatory. Mike Tomlin's walking out on press conferences. There's questions about his future. Meanwhile, here's what I think I can say about the Bengals. Joe Burrow is going to be healthy at some point during training camp next year. And if I get him for 17 regular season games, now with a backup who I know is good, regardless of how all the other things unfold. And I think we would all agree, this is the most interesting and to a degree painful Bengals offseason that we've had to confront in quite a while. But if at the end of all of it, you tell me I get Joe for 17 games, this is a playoff team next year. I can't say that in Cleveland. I can't say that in Pittsburgh.
No. I think I have the extension of your Browns analogy here. The vacation. I think the vacation is you're a teenager and you go on this vacation, but you have divorced parents, okay? And you go with your let's say your dad, okay? You go with your dad and your a couple brothers or sisters, whatever you have, and you're just off. It's you and your dad. And you're away, you're at Disneyland or you're on the beach and it's unbelievable. But when you go home, stepdad's there. You don't like him. You're forced to live with him.
Hitting home for me. I got to be honest with you. This sounds almost like you're telling my life story. I've lived this before.
No, I didn't mean that. I'm not trying to do anything with Deshaun Watson being your stepdad. I'm just saying that, like, for Browns fans, that's supposed to feel like, ugh. Now we got to go back to trying to figure out how I'm going to feel rooting for this guy and make this thing work. I hate trying to make this work and we're stuck making this work. Why can't we just get somebody who can do what Joe Flacco did, but isn't old and make it just make me feel better about my life? And you can't, because you are stuck. This is the house you live in. Okay. This is who was brought in and not leaving now. Loves your mom, apparently. And it's not great for you, but that's where the Browns. I'm with you. I think that you are 100% right that you, if you're the Browns or the Steelers today, how do you feel good?
Yeah,
I mean the Browns a little bit, because they were finding ways to win with no matter who was at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit, but there was some magic there, and The other part of this is, and I'll get to the Steelers element here in a second, is we talked about this. Winning the AFC North is not how you win the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Like winning right. by beating the crap out of each other and playing defense and running the ball is not how you win. The reason the Bengals have had success in the playoffs that no AFC North team has had in recent years is because they don't play like the AFC North.
Mm-hmm.
They play a game of open and passing and crushing people with big gains, throwing the ball. And that is how you win. And I thought that stood out about this weekend as much as anything in football. Talk to me all you want to about defense. Talk to me all you want to about run game. Talk to me about how you win in January. No. Throw the ball. Be explosive throwing the ball. Those are the teams that win. The end.
Yeah, it's funny to me. The Browns lost to a team that a lot of people are comparing to the 2021 Bengals, both in terms of just feel and newness, but also roster composition and quarterback play. Now, you know, CJ Stroud, you know, Houston offensively was frankly better than anything we saw really from the Bengals in the 2021 postseason, but I think the parallels fit. And so I to me, in terms of just takeaways, you're right. You know, you lost to Cleveland specifically, loses to a team that doesn't really look like it's built to win the AFC North, but they look like they're built to be a contender in the AFC for a long time. And I don't think anybody would be surprised if they at least give a scare to the AFC North champion. Like that voice, Baltimore Ravens.
That's how you have to talk about it.
Yeah, sure. I think there's thing to that. And again, it's like the more things change, the more things stay the same. Now, I do think Kevin Stefanski should be the coach of the year. And that's, you know, validation for him in Cleveland and, okay, he's the guy. But beyond that, we're going to spend the offseason, and I'm sure they will in Cleveland too, asking the same questions they were last offseason about Deshaun Watson. And in Pittsburgh, it feels like more of the same. You know, we'll see what's going to happen with Mike Tomlin. But, okay, what's going to happen at quarterback? How do we unearth what we haven't been able to do offensively? And now with the building narrative of the Steelers sort of being – dare I say, having taken on this Marvin Lewis-esque feel where, boy, they're in the playoffs a lot. They've lost their last five playoff games by an average of, I think, what, 13.6 points? Mm-hmm. And that goes back over a long stretch of time. Now, yes, Mike Tomlin has a ring, and he's going to Canton, and he's coached multiple Super Bowls, and he's never had a losing season. But this is a long period of time where even if they have made the postseason, you don't take them really seriously as contenders. They've become the Atlanta Hawks of the NFL, right? Where you know, they're always kind of there, and you just kind of, okay, fine. Yeah, you got had another winning season, but you don't take them seriously. What's going to have to happen for the Pittsburgh Steelers to be taken seriously as like bona fide AFC championship contenders? And I don't think it's far-fetched to suggest that if the Bengals have a reasonably good offseason, and Joe Burrow, we're going to do this again, time is a flat circle, as a somewhat normal training camp, that we're going to say, you know what, the Bengals, on top of whoever else it is, Kansas City, Buffalo, Houston, maybe Miami, I don't know, maybe Jacksonville figures things out. I'm sure the hype train will be in full effect if Harbaugh goes to the Chargers. But the Bengals are going to be one of those teams that we say, you know what, yeah, they can win it at the end. And I don't think we're going to say that about Pittsburgh at the end of this offseason. And I don't think we're going to say that about Cleveland at the end of this offseason because we don't know what Deshaun Watson is. And so to a large degree, we're going to be right back where we were at the end of last offseason, I think at the end of this offseason. And from a Bengals perspective, I don't think that's a bad place to be.
No. Ask yourself this. If you're listening to this, I assume you're a Bengals fan, or ask yourself this.
If you're not a Bengals fan and you're listening to this.
No, then you just appreciate good podcasting journalism.
But I'm curious as to the motivation, but go ahead.
Yeah. Because you enjoy two dudes who are bald with great sense of humor. You know what I'm saying?
And me.
And you. That's right. We bring you in. But here's my thought. If you're a Bengals fan, you're listening to this, and you ask you this question. Mike Tomlin. What would you rather hear the news be tomorrow? That he was fired or that he was brought back? Because if he's fired, let's just say this, in this world, that becomes the number one job. Because they don't fire coaches. You're going to get like a decade and a half.
Right, Pittsburgh. Yes.
They just, that's what it is. And they'll hire anybody. They can go find an offense. They could hire Brian Callahan. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say one of two things. They're going to fire Mike Tomlin and hire Brian Callahan, or they're going to continue to go forward with Mike Tomlin. What makes you feel better about having to compete against the Pittsburgh Steelers every year? Which scenario? Because,
yeah,
you know, the last 6 years, they've had two double-digit win seasons, two with positive point differential, one division title, and they're 0-2 in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They've had negative point differential for the last five seasons. I mean, this is not this is not a team that's become a scary franchise or something that you're truly worried about, especially if you're playing on the level the Bengals have been the last couple of years. Which would you rather have, Mo? Like, what news would you rather have?
Run it back with Mike Tomlin.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't think it's legitimately close.
I don't think it's close. Run it back with Mike Tomlin and what you're doing at quarterback right now. Run it back with Mike Tomlin. You know, I mean, for all that he has accomplished, I'm looking at this not through the lens of playing them in an individual game. You know, anecdotally, week to week, playing Mike Tomlin teams is tough. I'm looking at this from a standpoint of I want there to be as few contenders as possible in the AFC. I think is currently constructed with the way they've been trending now for well over half a decade. The Pittsburgh Steelers, I can't take seriously as bona fide, legitimate AFC championship contenders. In the Tomlin, over the last decade, they've lost playoff games to the likes of Blake Bortles at home, Tim Tebow on the road. They've had playoff games where they have given up 45 points and 42 points. Last night, it looked like they were going to give up 38 points. Offensively, despite all the weaponry they had in the last decade, they didn't get beyond an AFC championship game. And in that AFC championship game, they lost by nearly three touchdowns. Is all of this on Mike Tomlin? No, but it's been a while since you could look at that team and go Super Bowl contender. I think that about the Baltimore Ravens. Of course you do this year. I probably will next season. I don't think that about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Is that solely a reflection of Mike Tomlin? Of course it isn't. But with him in charge, it has felt like for a while and was the case this year, the ceiling for that franchise was reasonably low. And again, say what you want about Zach Taylor, and not to dismiss the significance of a lot of different things the Bengals have to get done this offseason, but if I get Joe Burrow and Zach Taylor next year, I think that ceiling's pretty damn high.
Yep.
Might not come to fruition the way I like, but I think that ceiling is pretty damn high. I don't think they could say that today in Pittsburgh, and I don't think they could say that next year if Mike Tomlin's back.
You know, here's a couple of things. I give Mike Tomlin a quarterback and you love him, right?
Like, oh, sure. Yeah.
Obviously. But he inherited Ben Roethlisberger and, mm-hmm. and in the job of having to replace him has not done it in over half a day. Hasn't yeah. done it. Has no, found a way to properly do it and not been good at putting OCs in place to develop or find one. And so mm-hmm. that combination is on him. The fact that they haven't had good quarterback play and that's doing them is on him because you could see that train coming from a mile away like Ben Roethlisberger trying to run a 40 at you. Okay? You knew you right. had to do that. They never did it properly and it landed on Kenny Pickett or whatever. And that's why they're in the situation that they're in and that's why there's not a lot of faith in what he's doing there because he hasn't been able to have any semblance of feel for that position and that side of the ball when it comes to life after Ben. And it's been a long ass time where they've had to figure that out.
Yeah. If I airdrop CJ Stroud into the Pittsburgh Steelers and Mike Tomlin's the coach. Okay. Forget it.
Yeah. Yes.
Apply the move to a different division. So, and again, you know, there's respecting what he's accomplished and you know, his resume is awesome, but I think we're to the point where now the best thing you could say is, well, he never finishes with a losing record. Okay.
Cool.
Marvin Lewis did that for five straight years and became a mm-hmm. national punchline.
Yeah.
You know, and then there was a time where it felt like God, for all that he has accomplished, which yes, pales in comparison to Mike Tomlin, but for all that he has accomplished, you know what, it's time to move on. And they did. And I think it'd be interesting to listen to sports talk radio and podcasts like this in Pittsburgh, because I would imagine that's a pretty divisive issue, but again, it feels like the ceiling for that franchise is low compared to what the ceiling should be for the Bengals next year if I get Joe B for 17 games.
Yeah, and the other side of this, but one my last takeaway here, Mo, to wrap this, is it touches on the Pittsburgh thing, but also direct look at Philly, and that is the value of quality coordinators and understanding that it's just not easy to just find somebody and put them in there. What's happened to Philly where Nick Sirianni lost all control. You lose your coordinators, it costs you. We said at the beginning of the year, nobody could have expected to catch up with him in the way that it did, in the way that it unraveled there. And then obviously the struggles that Pittsburgh had with Matt Canada in place and the mm-hmm. problems that it caused. And I take that back to the, we'll see what happens with Brian Callahan discussion, but the fact that they feel like the Bengals have a line of succession in place to put Dan Pitcher in there. And you don't know how that will go. I mean, you think probably, well, he's got a lot in his favor. If that is the case, but the fact that they have had this continuity at coordinator and they have a potential succession plan there that has familiarity with Burrow and everything they do is a huge advantage for them to not have some of the issues and the unraveling that you see when you're in the coordinator replacement game, because it becomes an easy mm-hmm. fall guy and you can see things go sideways so quickly.
Yeah, you know, I remember 10 years ago, the Bengals replaced both coordinators and they won 10 games, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah, won 10 games.
Yeah, in 2014, yeah.
Went 10-5-1, right? And I remember at the time, you know, they lost to the Colts and had, you know, they were grabbing dudes off I-74 to play wide receiver in that playoff game. And you know, swinging it back to Marvin Lewis for a second, I remember saying, like, this was a great coaching job. Mm-hmm. He's got a quarterback who's a B at best, two new coordinators, and they went into week 17 with a chance to win the division. That's a great coaching job. And, yeah, everybody fixates on the postseason result, and fine, but that's a great coaching job. And I remember saying, like, let's go and look at the history of over the last whatever it is, 15, 25 years of how many teams lost both coordinators and were better the following season. And 10 years later, I have yet to do that research. but I think it would be interesting. I don't know. It may have happened 20 times in the history of the NFL going back to 1980. It may have happened 4 times. I don't know. But how often does something like that happen where you lose both coordinators? Off the top of my head, I'm guessing Dallas in the 90s lost Turner and Wannstedt in the same offseason. But I could be dead wrong about that. How many times has that happened where the team was better or as good record-wise the following year? And again, I'm asking rhetorically. I'm not going to do the research. Let's be honest.
But it's succession plan is so much a part of the true quality succession plan. Jackson and Paul Gunther coming in and taking over was a big part of the fact that they were able to withstand that, and having that in place, people that had been there for the duration with that quarterback, with that mm-hmm. personnel, understood the issues at play and weren't dropping somebody in from the outside and things like that. Now, granted, Philly tried that too, and it doesn't always work.
But I even remember with the Bengals, you and I talking about, like, yeah, there were some hiccups. They got through it, but there inevitably are going to be hiccups. You know, there's a system change. There were hiccups, and yet they still survived. But I remember just thinking, like, their success and their failure, both to me, illustrated how good of a job Marvin did, how good the organization did in having a succession plan, but also it's really hard to do that. And what the Eagles went through this year, certainly toward the end of the season, which, you know, let's be honest, a lot of people who are into advanced analytical study told us this was going to happen with the Eagles back in October.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. I mean, there were
a lot of folks who said, look, if you're wrapped up in the result and want to talk about nothing but the result, awesome. But if you really do a deep dive into how they're achieving these results, this isn't sustainable. And boy, those people should take a victory lap because the Eagles down the stretch were miserable. They were awful against Tampa Bay.
No doubt. I'll give you one last chance before we go. Jason Kelce retiring today. Do you have any good Jason Kelce story? I assume that you probably do, just as much time as you spend around him and know of what he did at UC. Do you have a good Jason Kelce story?
I don't know if it's a story per se, but the anecdote that I will share is, and he was, you know, what a cool story. He was a walk-on running back / linebacker, which means they really didn't know what to do with him. Mm-hmm. He was the 191st overall pick in the draft, and he's going to go to Canton on his first appearance on the ballot. But what I think of more than anything during the chaos that was New Orleans leading up to the Sugar Bowl, when Jeff Quinn was the interim coach, all hell was breaking loose, right? It just, you know, I, to borrow a phrase, the inmates were running the asylum. So yes. The guy that I saw out most was Jason Kelce. Not doing anything wrong by any stretch of the imagination, but the guy that I saw out most, I've said this to Tony Pike a billion times, the guy that I saw just every night, well, okay, there's Jason Kelce. He's gearing up for the game. We had him on our show, I think the year after he was drafted, after his rookie season. I don't recall what the specific angle was other than we're having Jason Kelce on. And he was awesome. He was awesome with us. He's a terrific podcaster. He's had a great career. And he's going to go to the Hall of Fame, which is awesome. And by then, his brother will be married to Taylor Swift. And then they'll keep showing. Can I just talk about that real quick?
Yeah, of course. Okay. I hoped you would.
Game was on Peacock the other night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't subscribe to Peacock.
No.
And I wanted to watch the UC Bearcat game. So I went to an establishment that had Peacock in the Bearcat game. Peacock shows Taylor Swift. Whole plays booze. And then invariably, I don't care. That doesn't bother me. Folks are sounding off on how, like, all they do is show Taylor Swift. And I've heard this a lot. And I just want to say this, and maybe you're a little bit younger than me. I grew up watching NBA basketball in the 80s, which means the Showtime Lakers were in the finals every year, 85, 87, 88, 89. And they were on CBS in the regular season once NFL coverage stopped every weekend. And Magic Johnson could throw a bounce pass to Michael Cooper for a lay-in to make it 8-4. And they'd show Jack Nicholson. And then three possessions later, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar would make a sky hook and they would show Diane Cannon. To this day, I couldn't name for you one thing Diane Cannon was in. But nonstop as a kid, I remember Jack Nicholson, Diane Cannon, Lakers game, because they're famous. In the 90s, huge NBA fan. Madonna's dating half the NBA. And if you remember, there was this time where Madonna was showing up at NBA games like four times a week. She was at more NBA games than like game officials and like random NBA games. Like it's, Pistons versus Pacers on a Tuesday night. Right. And a play would be made in the game and got to get Madonna's reaction to it. Right. Fine. And then Madonna starts, her and Dennis Rodman. And then so Madonna's going to the, and then there's Madonna. And Madonna at the time was one of the most famous people on the planet, much like Taylor Swift is. Now, my point is this. Our fascination with celebrity is so longstanding that when really famous people go to sporting events, like Eminem the other night, nobody complained that Eminem was shown three times within a five-minute stretch, and fine, that's awesome. He's a Detroit guy, 8 Mile. It was awesome. Our fascination with celebrity is not a new thing. And showing really famous people at sporting events, not a new thing. And when really famous people are dating one of the main participants, not the long snapper, not some rando punt team gunner, like the also soon to be Hall of Fame tight end of the Kansas City Chiefs, she's going to be shown on television. This happened all the time growing up and we didn't complain. But since we have collectively decided to lose our minds about everything, now this is a big deal. And I just had to get that off my chest.
Yes.
Thank you for the forum.
I'm glad you chose here. And this is why people that aren't Bengals fans listen to this podcast, because that's the rant that they have wanted. I will add to this. You as a Nick fan know more than anyone, anytime a call does not go the direction of the New York Knicks, one
correct
thing and one thing only happens inside Madison Square Garden. Spike Lee, arms out, mouth agape, ready to yell at the official. Every single time, still happens, has been happening for 30 years.
Ashley Judd at Kentucky games for a long stretch of time. I mean, it like they would, Anthony Davis scores to make it 11-6. There's Ashley Judd. By the way, I will never complain about Ashley Judd being on my television at all. No. It's not. But we've done this for years, but now we're pretending that NBC and Peacock are just new to Tony Dungy's talking about disenchanted NFL fans. Only thing I've ever been disenchanted with Tony Dungy is when he called that game and sounded like he was half asleep without Michaels when Jacksonville played Los Angeles last year. This is not a new phenomenon. It's happened forever and will continue to stop losing your mind over Taylor Swift. I don't know if she's going to go to the game in Buffalo, but if she does, she's going to be shown, and it's fine because this is what we've done forever.
Please, please show me the hotel that Taylor Swift is staying in Buffalo. Having tried to get lodging in Buffalo, let me tell you, I'm here for her kayak search. All right, Mo, appreciate your time. As always, I will see you this afternoon on ESPN 1530.
I can't wait. Thanks. See you guys.
All right, bye.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Mo Egger, ESPN 1530, always here to bring you everything that you need in your day.
You know, we can localize the celebrity thing. Remember the Bill Murray at Xavier games for a while.
Wow. Yeah. A lot.
And I believe
Bill
every
Murray.
Place I worked, there would be a new boss at some point. I believe this happened at The Athletic as well, that would find that out after it's been reported here 7 million times and then lose their minds. And you had to start over again. And hey, there's Bill Murray watching his son assistant coach a basketball game.
Yeah. Let's write about it.
Now, real quick. How did you guys not talk about the Peruvian alien situation where it was shown that it was fake? Is that how we're doing this? Or are we just ignoring it when it's disproven?
I prefer when it's a little bit more concrete that we know that aliens are around rather than to for sure dive in when they're being discredited.
There needs to be a debunking portion of the show.
Maybe this could be your role, Dave. You come in, Dave debunks aliens. Is the segment that happens after Mo gets done every week.
I think with my cynicism, I could be good at that segment.
Debunking Dave, they'll start calling you. Hey, it's better than stepdad.
Hey, yeah. Now that you've drawn that line to Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, no, I didn't. The reason I felt most bad about that analogy was I know that we had referenced you as a stepdad before.
Now, suddenly,
and I don't feel that way about you. Yeah. You're definitely than the
I'm
other
the
guys.
Deshaun Watson of this podcast. I see where I stand.
I would never. I would never. I did not. I want that clear. I do want to point out, shout out to tie some loose ends from a previous episode. Shout out to Philip Bauman, who wanted to help us out with our conversation about one Michael Winslow from Police Academy. We were trying to place and put that whole thing together on the fly. And as we do, we were a little sloppy with it, not knowing we were going there. But he says, in an effort to clear up the confusion on a recent HTPG about the guy from Police Academy who did all the vocal sound effects, here he is doing Led Zeppelin, raising the question, is Michael Winslow the Joe Burrow of this specific talent? First of all, if you have a chance to look it up, you can look up Michael Winslow and Whole Lot of Love, and you will be amazed at what he does. Yeah. It is incredible. And yes, I mean, I don't know who else has. It would be if Joe Burrow was playing in the UFL, okay? Because I don't know who else even has this talent outside of, I guess, I'm not even counting beatboxers. They don't count because he does everything else way more.
Yeah.
It's like a whole different game. So if Joe Burrow were in the UFL, that would be what Michael Winslow is to making sounds into a microphone. Are you with me on this one?
He's the GOAT. He's the GOAT.
He is.
We knew that, but it was great to get that clarity and an example of it. I apologize because I confused Bubba Smith and Too Tall Jones on that conversation. I realized that later, and it about killed me. I was like,
yeah. Oh,
it was Bubba. So,
but this is my request. If anybody knows Michael Winslow's publicist, would love to have Michael Winslow on HTPG.
That would be amazing.
And have him just make sounds of football players. Or something. I'm down for whatever. Whatever he wants to make sounds of into a microphone, I'm here for.
100%.
Yes, for an entire episode. How much better would that be than listening to me and you talk about, like...
I mean, in fairness, that would be better than everything.
Yeah.
Like, you can say it'd be better than us talking, but it would be better than most things, so...
Yeah, no question. Yeah,
let's make that happen.
All right, Michael Winslow officially on the guest list going forward for what we need. Do you want to drop in any predictions for this weekend, Dave? Are you feeling it? Do you have any gut feels? I know you're really excited that the Packers continue to move on, because that keeps your season of not getting all the off days you'd like to sneak in.
And
Matt Schneiderman, who does a great job for us for covering Green Bay under your watch.
I normally would say I would assume the Niners will roll them, but good God, Green Bay looks fantastic right now. I do think their defense is still the weak point, and I think San Francisco will beat them, but I wouldn't be stunned if the Packers pull that one off. Jordan Love looks next level.
Jordan Love on a 2012 Flacco like heater right now too. I mean, where it's just like, I hope this is for his sake and for all those that took shots over the last 3 years. I hope this is like who Jordan Love is.
Yeah.
But if it's just a heater, then whoo boy, is it a hell of a one. I'm here for it. I'm here. Yeah. I think this is my favorite sports weekend of the year. I love divisional weekend. I love it more than the Super Bowl. I love it more than the conference championship. I think it's the best matchups. You get four of them over the course of the whole weekend. I this is my absolute favorite weekend. So do you have any other, sorry, I kind of interrupted you there for good.
No, I think Baltimore wins. I think this feels just right for them this year.
Yep.
And I just have a feeling Kansas City's going to win, and we're going to deal with them again, just because I don't really want them to.
Just because I always feel like the worst of what I want happens. Is that what you're saying? Like, just
yeah.
And then perfectly pessimistic.
I'd go Niners in Detroit. I think Tampa looked great last night, but they're playing a very...
No one wants to go to Detroit right now. No, that is a buzzsaw. No. That place is going to be a buzzsaw. Forget it.
And that was the best game of the weekend, Detroit and Rams. And for Detroit to come out of that, I think they probably roll over Tampa. You?
Yeah. I wouldn't like anyone going into Detroit now confident, and you know that atmosphere is going to be off the charts.
Yeah.
You know, they've got, again, when Mo was referencing earlier, the 2021 Bengals vibes, I remember specifically the talk there of, boy, if they got that first one and got the long monkey off their back, it's this freeing, now go kill it feeling that was part of what they unleashed in Tennessee and Kansas City that came next. And so I feel like Baker Mayfield is going to put him in a body bag. He's going to leave, in a body bag on that one. It just feels like Detroit is no place anyone wants to go right now. That if I was ranking 1 through 4, my confidence in results this weekend, I would start with Detroit beating Tampa Bay. Yeah. I feel great about that. I cannot believe the Houston-Baltimore line is 9.5. Houston has everything that says this team can win in the playoffs. They have the nobody believes in us. They have the quarterback who is awesome. CJ, I mean, who can go in there and beat anybody, make plays, overcome whatever you're trying to do to them. they're already on house money, and they're going to a Baltimore team that has all the pressure on them. We talked about this last week, Dave. This was the scenario that is frightening for the Baltimore Ravens to me. I think the Ravens would rather have Buffalo or Kansas City come into their house right now than Houston, who has nothing to lose, and the quarterback, who is a real dude, and they are confident as all can be, a team that the Baltimore's not super familiar with.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, now a lot of teams go and play Baltimore the first time, and they're not used to what Baltimore does to you. We saw that happen some this year when Detroit and Seattle went in there, and they were really surprised by just the different brand of football compared with Lamar, who's, when you're playing him kind of for the first time, it's very different. That they have that going for them. That said, this is scary. 9.5 is a huge number. I would be betting the farm on the value there with Houston on a money line. Not that I'm into such things, but if I was. And Houston to win the AFC, I saw it plus 3,300. If they can pull this one off, why wouldn't you like them to beat Buffalo or Kansas City potentially? And at that value, the other three teams were all pretty high. I just thought from a pure value perspective, hammer me plus 3,300 Houston. I mean, if you're just talking about making money.
Because there's nothing about Buffalo or Kansas City that looks like world beaters even now.
Not if you go into Baltimore and win.
Right, right.
Especially. So I think that's scary. I still think Baltimore wins, though, just because I'm with you. I think the Lamar factor and what they've done offensively does separate them, and the surprise factor can help them. But that is a scary scene for the Ravens, who probably wanted to feel like they were in a little bit better spot with this game. I still think Kansas City's flawed. I still think Buffalo wins. I think we get Buffalo, Baltimore. I think those have been the two best teams in the AFC for over a month. And we get the teams that we deserve to get. I'm with you. I think San Francisco and Detroit ends up and I look forward. One of my favorite things to do every year, Dave, is to do a deep look at the four teams that make it to the conference championship and compare them, find trends over the year. I look forward to doing that. We'll do some of that next week. Here when we kind of talk about the way they're constructed, how they were constructed, how they got there, and kind of dive into that a little bit. If it is San Francisco, I will tell you, Zach Taylor mentions San Francisco more than any other team when he discusses how he views the Bengals franchise in terms of sustainability, in terms of how they build things, in terms of, you know, you have the one off year where they had an injury at quarterback and came right back and won a bunch of games, were on the brink of the Super Bowl, win Super Bowl. I mean, that he talks about them a lot in that same regard. I think they view themselves in a very similar lens. And so San Francisco continuing to be in that spot, if you're, you know, talking about how they follow the path that they follow, how they view themselves, would be a good thing if you're looking for that as a Bengals fan. But as we've established, there's not all Bengals fans listen to this.
It's true. San Francisco's also got a sixth-round rookie quarterback that's not costing any money right now. So there's that big difference. But
no question. No question.
The Super Bowl, they're going to have to pay him at some point.
They will have to pay him, and then we'll see if they can sustain at that point. Well, they were paying Garoppolo. I mean,
true. That is true.
I mean, it was on the books. And they also botched a top five pick for a quarterback. So they've had plenty to screw with at the quarterback position and found ways to still win. All right. Much fun as always, Dave. Appreciate the time. And we'll keep it cooking. We'll be back next week. We'll talk a little bit about the conference championship games. And obviously more will be happening on Callahan Watch Day 11 as we move forward with where that goes. Much, much more. Keep it locked to The Athletic. More content coming your way. There's about 8 million words on the site from last week if you're interested in off-season look-ahead content. So plenty of there for you to still sift through. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans. This is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.